This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Under a landmark legal settlement, the state has spent the last several years shoring up services for people with mental illness in their communities to avoid long stays in psychiatric hospitals. But the need for that kind of institutional care has not abated. In fact, the number of people awaiting beds in the state's psychiatric hospital reached a record 68 recently. In one case, the Concord Monitor reported, a 23-year-old suffering from schizophrenia spent 18 days in a regular emergency room while waiting for appropriate placement. Now, accounts like these have led many to ask, could the state better allocate resources to strengthen both ends of the mental health system? Let's hear from you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at nhprexchange. With me in studio, Dr. William Torrey, a psychiatrist, vice chair for clinical services for the Department of Psychiatry at Dartmouth Hitchcock, which provides services at New Hampshire Hospital. Dr. Torrey has also worked for many years at the community mental health system. And Dr. Torrey, it's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, John Dixon, father of a 23-year-old son suffering from schizoaffective disorder who has been in and out of institutions seeking care. And John, I'm sorry for your struggles, and I look forward to hearing from you today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Aaron Ginsberg, attorney with the Disability Rights Center of New Hampshire, which, in addition to its work with people with mental illness, won a legal settlement against the state that I mentioned over how the state treats people with mental illness. Aaron Ginsberg, welcome. Good to see you.
Thanks, Laura.
And also with us, Ken Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And Ken, welcome back.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Well, Ken, I want to start with you, and we have talked about this so many times before. As I said, it's been more than 3 years since this mental health settlement, and yet the heads of the community mental health system, all of them, signed a recent letter saying the system is, to quote them, on life support. How come, Ken, 3.5 years, all this work, new money, and still in crisis?
I think the answer to that question is that we have lacked any type of real clear strategic plan done recently about what the mental health system needs. And we've been operating as if the mental health settlement agreement is that strategic plan, and it's definitely not. It's very narrow in terms of its interpretation and what its solutions that are proposed are. And, you know, there's also been this 1115 Medicaid waiver, which is an arrangement with the federal government and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services that will promote integrated care in the state. And there was a lot of energy and effort put towards that, and that has some exciting prospects. But again, it is not a strategic plan in terms of what the mental health center needs and its system needs. And we really need a very careful analysis to see where we are, and to particularly relative to the situation with the emergency department boarding, with people in a mental health crisis being held for days and weeks in the emergency department, to look carefully at that.
Do you agree with that assessment on life support? Because, again, that's pretty dramatic.
It's certainly a very serious situation.
What's been your experience, John? This is what has been brought to our attention recently by the letter from the community mental health centers, by excellent reporting at the Concord Monitor, the idea of people just waiting in emergency rooms for appropriate placement. What's your story?
I had to support my son, and he's had two hospitalizations now within the state. During the second one, he spent 13 days waiting for a bed. It was a trying time for him. It was an exceptionally trying time for me, trying to support him during that. He was in crisis and was receiving no treatment. And that, to me, is the most egregious part, is that they're in an involuntary admission. He's taken in. He's identified as having a problem, but receives no treatment during that time period that they're holding him, waiting to get him that treatment. And it's just very difficult for the patients. It's very difficult for the loved ones.
So 13 days, where did he stay?
He was in basically a 12 by 12 room in Frisbee Memorial Hospital. just waiting. They in essence, take all your rights away, take your clothing away, give you hospital garb, put a guard outside your door, and have you just wait. And there's really no treatment going on. And as you were talking about in your show, you know, the people that are waiting over now, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, trying to get into New Hampshire Hospital.
13 days is a really long time
to sit. When you're in crisis, when you're psychotic and you don't understand what's going on around you and can't fully comprehend entirely what's there, it's very difficult.
How old is your son?
My son is 23. He celebrated his 23rd birthday in New Hampshire Hospital.
Well, I'm so sorry that you've had to go through this experience, and we'll definitely talk a little bit more about it as the hour goes on. I want to turn to you, Dr. Torrey. Why does somebody have to wait 13 days in the midst of a psychiatric crisis for a bed at New Hampshire Hospital to get appropriate treatment? It just seems like it's going to make the situation 6,000 times worse.
Well, it definitely makes things worse, not better. People that are acutely ill need care. You know, imagine people waiting 13 days if they had a serious cardiac illness or serious gastrointestinal illness. And as a society, we would not tolerate that at all. There'd be an outcry. So there's starting to be an outcry. The show is part of an outcry. But we need a solution to get people care quickly when they're ill. You know, mental illnesses are diseases of the brain. How can we let people with these illnesses, brain illnesses, wait and not get care that they need?
After the settlement, there was hope that, in addition to the community mental health services that we'll talk about, there were supposed to be more beds at New Hampshire Hospital, right, Dr. Torrey?
New Hampshire Hospital did open up 10 beds.
That's what I thought.
July 1st,
yeah.
For acute care. And that did increase the number of people that were able to be served.
But not enough.
And not enough. The numbers are higher than they've ever been.
Wow. Aaron Ginsberg, what's your perspective on this?
Well, I mean, I think the psychiatric boarding problem, people being stuck in emergency departments, is definitely a really big indicator that something's not going right. When we were doing our legal advocacy, it was not focused on that particular issue. It was focused on people that didn't need to be receiving inpatient treatment at New Hampshire Hospital. But the services that we focused on were all community-based services. And really, some of them were designed to prevent even that initial admission to an emergency department or subsequent admission to New Hampshire Hospital. And others were designed to make it easier to be discharged from New Hampshire Hospital. And both of those really help to alleviate the pressure on the system, and it should reduce the number of people that are waiting. You know, for some examples, we have a couple new mobile crisis programs that are out, and these are programs in Concord and Manchester that are designed to help people that are in a psychiatric crisis, but can actually divert people from ever going to the emergency department or the ER. And there's some great data being reported back from these two groups that show significant diversions. There are crisis apartments associated with it. Riverbend, the mental health center in Concord, is operating the mobile crisis team in that area, and they track their diversions by people that never have to go to the emergency department, maybe people that they can actually just provide some phone assistance to and prevent an emergency department admission, people that they've actually taken out of the emergency departments. Instead of going from the emergency department to New Hampshire Hospital, they go to the mobile crisis apartment or go to mobile crisis services, and you avert a diversion. In the last sort of quarter of information we have reported from them, they've had something in the neighborhood of, like, April to June, they had 288 diversions. In July to September, they had 260 diversions.
So there might have been more people showing up in the emergency room if it weren't for this community-based work.
There would have been a lot more people showing up in the emergency rooms. Manchester's a much newer program. It rolled out over a year later, and they don't have their crisis apartments fully up yet. But in a five-week period, I think they had around 140, 150 diversions. In the last quarter of data we have from New Hampshire Hospital, they had 373 admissions in a 3-month period. So there's those numbers are close. You know, I mean, you're it would be, I think, a lot higher if you couldn't have these services in place. And then on the other side, they help people leave New Hampshire Hospital earlier too, because you can discharge somebody into a higher intensity service. You can discharge
better places for people to go, so to speak.
Well, better services for them in their apartments or their community. There's a program called Assertive Community Treatment, and this program is sort of like the wraparound equivalent in the mental health system, which provides the maximum, you know, multiple contacts, even daily if necessary, for somebody to stay stable. The supportive housing program has really improved in the last couple years, and you know, if you don't have an apartment of your own, it's really hard, a lot harder to be stable. So these programs help people stay stable in the community. Supported employment helps people stay stable and avoid the crisis initially, or maybe discharge a little bit sooner. But there's other programs that that can help actually divert once somebody is in a crisis, and Mobile Crisis or ACT can do that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And I was going to say these are really cost-effective ways to provide service too, because there's federal matching money that you get. There's a lot of capacity that is, you know, still available and underused in this state.
Underused money in New Hampshire.
Well, underused capacity.
Capacity. Let me jump in and invite our listeners to join us. And then I have a big question for all of you, which is the sort of short-term, long-term nature of this problem. The number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, nhpr.org. You can also respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We're looking at New Hampshire's mental health system once again, and the idea that there are a lot of people waiting in emergency rooms where they should not be. Meanwhile, there is effort, as we just heard, to beef up services at the community level. We're looking at how the state spends its mental health resources, trying to shore up both ends of this system. Let's hear from you. The exchange number again, 1-800-892-6477. So, gentlemen, let me see if I've got this right. And Ken, I'll turn to you first. It seems to me there's a short-term, long-term nature to this problem, that in the long run, if the system is strong at the community level, like Aaron described, people will need fewer institutionalizations. And that's the goal everybody shares. But in the short run, Ken, it seems like people are in crisis. They need a safe place. They need proper care. And it's not happening, as we see with these, you know, people like John's son waiting 13 days, my goodness, in the ER. So what's the kind of way out of this short-term, long-term problem?
Well, I think that, again, part of it is to come up to really do a very clear assessment and come up with a clear plan about what the actions are that we're going to take. We have seen the numbers just in the last 22 months triple. Back in April of 2015, we were averaging about 12 people per day
waiting,
and right now we've been averaging over 40. Yesterday afternoon it was 46. The good news was most of last week there were zero children. There were zero children yesterday waiting. The numbers for children have tripled from just over like 1.5 to now 5 or 6 on average per day. So but when you mentioned the new unit at New Hampshire Hospital, when that opened on July 1st, we've seen the numbers go up continuously since then as well. Part of that was that there was a private hospital, Cheshire Hospital, that closed its unit the week before. That was 12 beds. So, you know, we started with a net loss across the state of 2 beds when the new hospital unit opened up. In terms of solutions, we really are looking at the need for statewide mobile crisis response. To Aaron's talk about, you know, how that is successful in diverting people, that would be critical to bring that across the state, not just in 3 regions. We really need more beds, and we need more bed capacity, and those are both community beds and beds at New Hampshire Hospital. And we need more community programs. When we were number one in the country in the early 90s, we had a lot more capacity within the community. There were group homes that had 24-hour supervision and crisis-type beds. More peer support programs, day treatment programs, which we no longer have, which allowed for sort of step down from a hospital where somebody could go 5 days a week. So there's a lot more community supports that are needed. Peer support is also a real critical need to enhance that in the state. We have some good programs, but we need more.
Dr. Torrey, why did hospitals, community hospitals like Cheshire, close their psychiatric units? Because now it seems like everybody's looking at New Hampshire Hospital, more beds there. But Ken's right, there used to be psychiatric units at many local hospitals.
I think there are two main reasons that hospitals have closed psychiatric units. The first is that the payment for psychiatric hospitals care is not high enough. It's harder for hospitals to afford to run psychiatric units, particularly if they can use the beds for medical or surgical patients, which would be more cost effective for the hospitals. And I think the second reason is that there's a national shortage of psychiatrists. To run a hospital, you need to cover the unit 24 hours a day with good psychiatric coverage. And recruiting psychiatrists is incredibly challenging. I spend a lot of my time recruiting psychiatrists, and it's and this is an issue across the entire nation. Most 55% of psychiatrists are 55 years of age or older. People are retiring. There is an increase in young people going into psychiatry now. But it takes 4 years to train a new psychiatrist, and here in New Hampshire, we have to bring them into the state as well.
Because there's cross-border issues, right, with qualifications and so forth?
Well, and there's demand for psychiatrists everywhere in the country.
Sure.
So, I don't go a week without getting five or six recruiters trying to recruit me, and this is true for every psychiatrist anywhere.
You know, John, speaking as a father, again, whose son really suffered, what's your perspective on this sort of short-term, long-term problem? Everybody would rather have, you know, great community supports, have their son or daughter out in the community, living a full life. But on the other hand, there are these incidents like what happened to you.
I think there is a systemic problem. The state's in a difficult position, but I don't think they're managing. I think they're reacting. And without managing, they're always going to be reactive. I'm not sure that they know all the things that go on. As an example, my son's first hospitalization, he came out of New Hampshire Hospital, was discharged still psychotic, chose not to interact with the community mental health system, and for the next 9 months did nothing, and again ended up back in New Hampshire Hospital because the state didn't follow through with him. He didn't follow through with the state. There was, I don't want to be, saying Big Brother is coming, but somebody should have been more proactive. We talk about assertive community teams. There was no such thing for him. He didn't get involved in any of that, and they didn't come to find him. So it's changing somewhat on this discharge. They had mandated that he go to an induction, but maybe that's because he's on a conditional discharge, whereas before he was not. So I think there are some real systemic problems with the state being able to be reactive and not proactive and figure out what's going on.
And it's hard because he's in his young 20s, so he's no longer a minor. He can't really do what you say.
And HIPAA becomes a huge issue because being able to communicate with the hospitals, being able to communicate with the treatment providers becomes an issue if he chooses to shut down. He and I have a great relationship, and we're still working together. And that's very helpful to me. But I know there's a lot of families that don't have that today. And that's kind of a problem for them.
Well, we'll pick up on this in just a minute. The idea of people's rights and when those rights conflict with appropriate treatment. Also coming up after a super short break, we're going to talk to the New Hampshire Hospital Association about why those psychiatric beds have gone away. All that plus your calls, so stay with us.
Mm-hmm. Poet Eva Kruschill writes in her most recent collection about the history of American immigration.
And I think it's funny that history repeats itself, and that as soon as we get legalized, we tend to distance ourselves from those people who are not legalized yet, but they have something to tell us.
This week on The Bookshelf from NHPR, Eva Kruschill on poetry and immigration. Subscribe to The Bookshelf from NHPR wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Today in The Exchange, emergency room waits and the mental health system. We're looking at how resources are allocated in a short-term, long-term fashion. Long-term, strengthening community mental health supports. But in the short term, there seems to be a need for people who need acute psychiatric care at state hospitals and community hospitals. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Ken Norton, Dr. Torrey, Aaron Ginsberg, John Dixon, I want to bring another voice quickly into our conversation. Steve Onan is on the line, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association. And Steve, welcome back. Always nice to have you.
Thanks, Laura. Nice to be here.
So not that long ago, hospitals were far more likely to have psychiatric units, but recently hospitals have begun closing these units. We just heard the example of Cheshire Medical Center. Why are hospitals closing these units down?
Well, I think Dr. Torrey was absolutely correct. You know, there are a couple of challenges. Number one is reimbursement and the ability for those units to be self-sustaining. The reimbursements have not been adequate and sufficient, and that's been part of the challenge. The other part is clearly a recruitment issue, and I know that was, you know, a driving factor in the decision over in Cheshire County, over at Cheshire Medical Center, in terms of their decision. But, you know, we have actually seen some additional capacity that's been created over the last couple of years, some additional DRF beds at Franklin Regional Hospital, voluntary beds at both Parkland Medical Center and Portsmouth Regional Hospital, as well as some additional DRF beds at Portsmouth, and some geropsych beds at both Frisbee Memorial Hospital and Cottage Hospital. So I think, you know, while we certainly have seen a reduction, we've seen some hospitals that have been adding some capacity to those.
More recently.
What's
a DRF bed, Steve?
It's a designated receiving facility, so it's a bed that you know, operates much like a bed at New Hampshire Hospital and can accept a patient with an involuntary emergency admission.
So you talked about reimbursements, and just spell that out for us, what that means and why it was better in the past where hospitals were able to do this.
Well, obviously, given the financial, you know, challenges facing hospitals and healthcare today, the lower reimbursement or the lack of adequate reimbursement, you know, it becomes becomes difficult for hospitals to continue to provide services that aren't self-sustaining, that lose money, and that, you know, certainly drives many of the decisions that hospitals make. Obviously, they do that in the context of, you know, what's necessary and what's needed in the community, and we've seen some hospitals that have been working to try and make some additions. And I think, you know, some of the recent changes in insurance reforms that require that adding mental health and substance use services to insurance benefits certainly helps, in the sense that it provides some ongoing support for those services, where perhaps in the past that may not have been there. You know, people may have had insurance, but they didn't have coverage.
Sure.
For some of those services. And so having that coverage for those services certainly helps. And I think over time, you know, we can see some additions. And I think that's certainly been part of why we've seen some of this additional capacity, with that understanding that those benefits will be there.
The capacity somewhat coming back, because under the Affordable Care Act, I thought that you guys got more money in terms of both more people being covered and just more cash for the hospitals.
Well, that's certainly true. We are you know, seeing more people who are insured, and that's really a good thing. But, you know, part of the method of paying for all of those coverage gains, we hear a lot of people talk about you know, a variety of taxes and other things that were used to pay for that, but significant Medicare spending reductions that hospitals would have received, hospitals are now experiencing those reductions. And so when, on the one hand, while you've seen some, you know, revenues go up, you've seen others go down. And as, you know, more and more people are covered, that's a really good thing because it means they can get ongoing preventative care. But on the other side, as we see those reimbursements come down, it certainly creates that financial challenge.
So we've heard stories, including one of our guests, of patients in a mental health crisis showing up in emergency rooms around the state, which everybody agrees are the worst possible place to get appropriate help, both for the patient and for the hospital staff. So it would seem, Steve, that hospitals are dealing with this issue one way or the other. Wouldn't it be better for everybody, patients and staff, to just reopen the psychiatric unit and then you don't have this emergency room problem?
Again, these are patients who are in an acute psychiatric crisis. They need specialized services, and that's what they need, and they need to get that in many cases, at an institution like New Hampshire Hospital, where they can receive the treatments, the care that they need in the right place at the right time. And I think that's certainly the challenge. And I think, there's been a lot of discussion this morning. I think it's been a great conversation. And the word that continues to come up is this lack of a system and the fact that the system is not functioning. And I absolutely think that's right. It's not just one aspect. It's a system approach, and we need to have more services out in the community to help people manage their conditions, to deal with their conditions, to avoid the crisis, and when they're in a crisis, to avoid the emergency room. We need to have services to help people move outside of the hospital so that they can get the care that they need and move back into the community. But, part of the solution, is additional inpatient capacity. And I think we've had a waiting list at New Hampshire Hospital, now 4 or 5 years. How long do we need to wait before we sort of, recognize that we simply don't have enough capacity? We need more beds, but we need a lot more things, not just inpatient capacity.
Sure.
If all we did was build additional beds, we wouldn't solve the problem because we'd still have the problem of people, not having access to services that create the crisis and then, dealing with post-crisis. So we need to deal with this not just in one aspect, but we need to deal with all of those.
Well, and those are the community services that Aaron Ginsberg, talked about and said this is the whole point, is to build this community infrastructure so that folks don't need to come to the ER or come to New Hampshire Hospital. But just picking up what you said, Steve, that the system needs to be better. And you talked about the needing more beds at New Hampshire Hospital. What about the local hospitals, though? It seems like they used to play a role in this system, and they don't do it as much as they used to.
I'm not certain that that's the case, Laura. When a patient, has an involuntary emergency admission, when that paperwork is signed and that patient is cleared and ready to go to New Hampshire Hospital, in the past, those patients would be transported immediately to New Hampshire Hospital to get the care they need. But that's not happening because there is no additional bed available. And so I think, we are seeing more work that's being done out in the community, in the hospitals, and we'll continue to see more. But that does not alleviate the need for acute inpatient psychiatric services that we simply don't have enough of here in New Hampshire.
Would it be better to have patients in that crisis moment that you described, Steve, getting that excellent psychiatric care close to home?
Absolutely. You always want to provide care as close to home as you can, but you also want to make sure that those patients are getting the care they need when and where they need it. And, I think the clinicians can talk much more about the ability to provide some of those services out in the community, but there are many of those patients who will always need the high level of acute care services that a state hospital or a designated receiving facility can provide. I don't think it's I don't think it's realistic to suggest or to think that all community hospitals will be able to provide the same level of care for those patients. It's about getting the patient the right care at the right place at the right time.
All right. Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Onen, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, lots of callers, but I think John Dixon, you wanted to jump in there.
I was just listening to Steve, and we're talking about the front-end process and the troubles it's having. One of my observations, having been visiting, my son spent 3 months just recently getting out of New Hampshire Hospital, I saw a lot of long-term patients there. I don't know what those numbers are. I'm not aware of what the system is. But to me, again, that system, we need the acute care, but I think there's some longer-term care that's needed too, in an intermediate stage before they step out back into the community. And maybe that middle's what we're missing, is somewhere where they're not in crisis, but they're not ready to go to the community yet. And, you know, a little bit easier facility to build maybe than an acute care facility.
That's super interesting. And so, Dr. Torrey, I want to hear from you on that, but also you, Aaron Ginsberg. I like what you say, that maybe we need a stronger middle. You're not in crisis, but you're not quite ready to go to those, you know, wonderful community support services that Aaron described. Go ahead, Dr. Torrey.
Well, I think Ken's right that we need an overall assessment, and there are a number of elements to it. I think this idea of an intermediate care, both for people who may not need the state hospital yet, but also for people leaving the state hospital, there may be people that could be discharged if there was the support that was needed, freeing up a bed for a new acute patient.
Who jumped out the window, pardon me for interrupting, this is the case of the woman who jumped out the window, I think, last year from Nashua. She had been released from New Hampshire Hospital, but apparently wasn't quite ready and ended up killing herself. So,
another part of the system, though, that I think is really essential is what happens in the emergency rooms. If people aren't immediately able to go to the state hospital, it's really important to get a really good evaluation from a psychiatrist in the emergency room and to get whatever care can be started. It's not where you really want to be. No one wants to get their whole care in an emergency room, but you can get started. At Dartmouth-Hitchcock, where we have psychiatrists covering all the time, we're able to initiate care even while people are waiting to go to New Hampshire Hospital. And this is, I think, where the local beds can play a role too, because we've had lots of people who get care started in the emergency room and then get well enough to actually come onto our voluntary unit and never go to New Hampshire Hospital.
Wow, that's interesting. So like John's son, instead of sitting there for 13 days in this horrible situation, he could have at least gotten started with somebody at the local hospital if that had been available, which, you know, is not widely available.
Right. But that's another part of the system that can be worked on. You can, through telepsychiatry, you can do evaluations of people, even if you don't have a psychiatrist who works right there at the hospital, if it's all arranged. It's part of the overall system of care.
Okay. So, Aaron, I'm intrigued by what John describes as, you know, do a better job with the middle.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that when we've been talking about the middle, we've been talking about it before you go to an inpatient level of care or after, and what that middle could look like. There are some middle programs already in New Hampshire Hospital. There's a transitional housing program that some people discharge from New Hampshire Hospital into. But they can end up there for a very long time too, and they can end up there not in their community. And when you're not in your community, you lose very important family and friend relationships. You might lose your apartment. You might lose your job. You might have to explain a stigmatized illness, mental illness, to an employer. And it makes it very much harder to actually return or fully discharge back into your community in your old life. So, you know, we really do sort of put emphasis on programs like assertive community treatment that can, I think, serve the same place as a physical middle because of the high intensity of services that are provided. I mean, if somebody is provided with supportive housing, they're given an apartment that's subsidized that they can be in, and the supports to keep the apartment and stay in the apartment and check-ins to make sure they're getting their clothes washed and getting to the grocery store and taking their medication and making their appointments and going to their job or looking for a job. I mean, these are all great programs, and to be there to provide an immediate support in a crisis.
If somebody agrees to do that, and I think that's sometimes the struggle, right? Someone just says, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, a lot of times it's difficult to engage
people. And
then
people, they spiral downward again.
And it takes a lot of repeated attempts to get people there. But to have the service available, you know, and if it's a high-quality service, it will, you know, people will respond and you will end up catching a lot. You won't catch everybody, but you'll catch a lot of them and they will engage in it. You know, one of the things that the state has really worked hard on is increasing ACT, and the state is
again assertive community.
Assertive community.
That's
treatment.
Okay.
and the state is also The state's also really endorsing mobile crisis. They'd like to see it statewide, too. But with ACT, right now, we have it reported that there's the capacity, the physical staff and people available to serve somewhere between 1,100 and 1,200 people, but only 860 are actually receiving the service. And there's a huge number of people right there that with existing infrastructure that could be served. And it would be great to see that number go up, and you can do that way faster than bringing on a whole new facility or opening a whole new wing of a inpatient facility.
Well, I can see everybody wants to jump in. I want to bring our listeners into this as well. And let's go to Deb in Pembroke. Hi, Deb. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much, Laura. I really appreciate your show and your past conversations, and encourage this conversation to continue. Hi, Ken. I'm actually a former colleague of Ken. I just want to make comments about my experience with the journey of bipolar manic depression for over 30 years. When I started with this illness and the diagnosis, my experience in hospitalization in the emergency room, where care was given by in my intake to get into a hospital bed, was given and done by nurses that had psychiatric training. All of that care in the multiple hospitalizations I had was through that experience, going to the emergency room, getting the evaluation from a nurse, and then being brought up to a floor, a psychiatric bed. And these were in the community hospitals, which I hear that gentleman speaking about community hospitals, but I want to advocate for this kind of care to start up again in community hospitals. Up until this time, 2 years ago, I had two hospitalizations within six months of each other. I did have most of my hospitalizations were in Massachusetts, and in the early 2000s, I had the experience at Catholic Medical Center that I did in the past, which was having an evaluation by a nurse in the emergency room. A couple years ago, with the 2 6-month hospitalizations, I ended up in Elliott and in Concord Hospital. And both experiences, I waited hours and hours.
Oh, geez, Deb. And I'm sorry to hear about your struggles. And you sound very good, given what you've been through. But there's another vote, Ken Norton, for the return of local psychiatric care at those local hospitals.
I think we really need, to the point that's been made, to, as much as possible, build that capacity. And, you know, we're seeing that a lot of people end up in, for instance, I hear that over 50% of the people that come to the Concord Hospital emergency room are not from the Concord region. So I think that that speaks to the fact that, for mental health services. So I think that speaks to the fact that we really need to enhance, and obviously, you know, there, Steve talked about the full spectrum, and that, you know, there might not be that intensity of an involuntary admission at a maybe small regional hospital. But when more local hospitals had voluntary admissions, when they had different specialty areas, when they really had a focus on inpatient and outpatient services, that continuum of services, we were not seeing the backup that we see now in the emergency departments.
So again, looking to the local hospitals to step it up, is that what you're saying?
I mean, that's part of it. And again, I would say we really need that clear assessment about who are we dealing with and how many, you know, we have 168 beds now in New Hampshire Hospital. Contrast that with 1957, when we had 500,000 people less and we had 2,700 beds for the state. So what is it that we need, and who are the people that are there, and who is ready to come out the back door, and how do we ease that back door or accelerate that appropriately, manage that risk so that we can get people in the front door?
And nobody, though, is advocating, right, Aaron, for to go back to that old system. That's what the Disability Rights Center has been pushing against, you know, committing people who really shouldn't be committed.
Yeah, you know, the old system definitely cast a much wider net for people that they institutionalized than needed to be institutionalized. I would say, as far as, you know, the average length of admission at a place like New Hampshire Hospital is very small. And you could bring on more crisis apartments in a mobile crisis team, or more peer respite apartments in a peer support program that you can stay for that number of days. And
okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Aaron. We will definitely pick it up in just a minute. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Poet Eva Kruschill writes in her most recent collection about the history of American immigration.
And I think it's funny that history repeats itself, and that as soon as we get legalized, we tend to distance ourselves from those people who are not legalized yet, but they have something to tell us.
This week on The Bookshelf from NHPR, Eva Kruschill on poetry and immigration. Subscribe to The Bookshelf from NHPR wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, mending the mental health system. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests. Dr. William Torrey is here, a psychiatrist, vice chair for clinical services for the Department of Psychiatry at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, which also provides services at New Hampshire Hospital. Ken Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Aaron Ginsberg, an attorney with the Disability Rights Center of New Hampshire. And John Dixon, father of a 23-year-old son suffering from schizoaffective disorder, who has been in and out of institutions seeking care. Again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Aaron, I had to cut you off there right before the break. We were talking about, okay, maybe we need more institutional beds for folks in a severe situation, but nobody wants to go back to the bad old days where people were, you know, sort of willy-nilly institutionalized against their will.
And I think that, you know, to summarize and not redo a lot, it is, you know, it's better to have somebody served closer to their community. Sometimes they can't stay in their apartment or their home just because of a relationship or their crisis, and they need a different place to go. But you could go to New Hampshire Hospital. Better would be to go to an inpatient facility very locally, so you stay linked into your community. Even better than that might be to go to a apartment that is attached with a mobile crisis team or a apartment attached with a peer respite program.
So there's expertise close by to help you out.
Very close by. You build relationships. And a lot of times those admissions aren't necessarily going to be longer than your admission at a full-blown inpatient psychiatric facility.
John?
I've seen the statistics on, I think, a 14-day turn is the average at New Hampshire Hospital. I question that. I learned a lot of names, a lot of faces. I've got a lot of people that I know because Andrew was there 3 months. And there are many people that were there right alongside him in that same time period. Close to home, just another side point, close to home would be much better. I drove an hour a day, but I live close. I can't imagine if I were up in the North Country and having to visit my son and I tried to stay connected. I think that's important.
Well, it
so
seems
close
like,
to home is better.
It seems like everybody's agreeing, even though, you know, we've all got different viewpoints here that – local hospitals need to
just
beef
to keep
up
the,
their psychiatric
to units. Keep the family connected, and that's I think an important part of it. Not every family can be connected, but I think it's important.
Dr. Torrey, is it necessarily a bad thing if somebody's at New Hampshire Hospital for 3 months?
Not if that's what they need to stabilize. You know, I think it's really important just to point out that these are painful, difficult illnesses, but they no one asks for these illnesses. These are illnesses that happen to people, and that. They're also extremely treatable. When people have access to the services that are known to work, that have been shown to be effective, people get better and people can recover their lives and really get on with life. I mean, all of us know lots of people with severe mental illnesses and we don't know that they're ill because they're doing well. People really can do well. And New Hampshire Hospital, I just want to say, I had the opportunity to provide care directly at New Hampshire Hospital from July through December this year. I've been involved with the hospital for many years, but I was incredibly impressed. The nurses are really good at New Hampshire Hospital. The activities therapists and the social workers were very, very effective. It was a pleasure to work on those teams. And the psychiatrists are faculty psychiatrists from Dartmouth. They are very smart. They're very good. They're very effective. One thing I think people don't appreciate how much of a jewel we actually have in New Hampshire Hospital. And this decreases the intensity because if you find yourself in a treatment environment where you're actually getting really good care, you're going to get better more quickly and get on with life and be able to be in a position to be discharged to outpatient care much faster. So I think New Hampshire Hospital is kind of remarkable.
And so it's not just a place where people are sort of kept so they're out of trouble. It's a place where people get better.
Active treatment and the leadership with Bob McLeod and Alex Denezra, who's acting medical director, are exceedingly strong.
Go ahead, John, real quick.
I just wanted to support Dr. Torrey's position. I have nothing but positive things to say. It was a great facility. The staff, the clinicians, everybody there did a great job for the time period that Andrew had to be there, and they got him the treatment that he needed, and it was perfect.
You just wish he didn't have to wait in an ER for 13 days before he got there. Go ahead, Ken.
Just want to make the point that we're talking a pendulum swing here, and those 2,700 when we were at the peak of institutionalization is an extreme. The 168 we're at now is the other end of that extreme, and it is not enough beds, and we need more beds.
It gets to what John said earlier. Maybe we need to find a better middle here in New Hampshire. Let's go back to our listeners, all of you. Melinda's in Nashua. Hi, Melinda. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have concerns. My daughter went to Concord Hospital, she was admitted on a Friday. Didn't see anyone till a Monday. So if you're admitted on a Friday, you're in a holding tank, more or less. And when she was discharged, she didn't get to see anyone at Nashua, Greater Nashua Mental Health, because there's no one available for a while. When there was, she was prescribed medicine, which she did not do well on, and she called the 800 number and was not getting a call back. And we're talking about more than a week. She went to her primary care, who tried to call the 800 number, and he said he was disgusted that nobody was calling her back.
What's the 800 number, Melinda?
It's the 800 number for Greater Nashua Mental Health. I don't have that in front of me.
I see. Okay.
And I'm speaking about my daughter, so I'm more or less, you know, giving you private information.
Right, right.
But I tried to get her a local help, and people refuse. They don't want a case that could be a difficult case. And her medicine is so strong, so when she has a reaction, their answer to her was, if you're having trouble and no one's calling you back, go to the emergency room.
Right.
And when you go to the emergency room, you have to be a mental health patient, go with someone to see how you are treated. You are more or less put in the background. My daughter's been put in the hallway while waiting for a room at Concord Hospital. They suffer. Like the doctor said, they didn't ask for this. They didn't buy a pill to get
sure.
this way.
Well, Melinda, you're from Nashua. Why go to Concord Hospital?
I don't know whether I'm saying that right. It's New Hampshire Hospital. For
oh,
the
New Hampshire
Ill.
Hospital. I see.
I apologize.
Okay. No, that's okay. That's okay. Wow. Well, again, like our earlier caller, I'm sorry to hear about your struggles. And I wonder what you think, Dr. Torrey. You know, here's a mom trying to help her daughter out, but it just seems like she keeps bumping up against roadblocks and difficulties.
I have had the opportunity to work in community mental health in New Hampshire for a very long time. When I first started in the late 1980s, we really had a lot of resources. We were able to care for people, get them in quickly, provide the care that was needed, put together a team, help people stay out of the hospital, help families to understand what was going on. And my experience in community mental health is that the system has gradually been bled quite a bit in terms of the finances, so that community mental health centers are caring for more and more ill people with less and less resources gradually over time. I understand there's been an effort to beef that up and that's helping some, but I think we lost a lot of ground over the years. So, you know, the caller's daughter really should be able to access care quickly, and the medicines are significant medicines that can have side effects, and they need to be managed carefully by a psychiatrist who knows what they're doing.
Let's take another call, and good luck to you, Melinda. Let's take Jacob in Exeter. Hi, Jacob. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an ER physician at a small community hospital, and I feel for the previous caller. I want to emphasize that, you know, the way we treat mental health patients is with care and the best of our abilities, but we're not mental health professionals. We're emergency physicians.
Sure.
And so we're stuck in a difficult position.
Which hospital are you at, Jacob, if I could ask?
Exeter Hospital.
Exeter Hospital. And do you folks have a psychiatric unit there?
We don't have an inpatient unit, so we take patients in crisis, stabilize them as best we can in the emergency room, which is difficult, and then transfer them to somewhere like New Hampshire Hospital.
What do you think the best solution would be, Jacob, to expand the beds at New Hampshire Hospital so you can keep doing what you're doing, or recreate a psychiatric unit right there in Exeter?
I don't think we need a psychiatric unit in Exeter. I definitely think more bed capacity is an important piece of the puzzle. we don't measure patient stays in days, like John's son for 13 days. We recently had a patient within the last couple of months that was there for 648 hours. So you can do the math, but that's almost a month.
Wow.
So beds would help. I also think that there's oftentimes a substance abuse component that hasn't really been discussed, and more treatment for substance abuse, alcohol, and other substances, especially in this state, I don't think we do a very good job of.
Okay.
So that would be one leg of the stool, I think.
Thank you so much for calling, Jacob, especially given your experience in the emergency rooms. You know, we've talked a lot about treatment at the state hospital. Aaron's talked about treatment at the community level. We've talked about, you know, maybe there's capacity or more could be more capacity at the local hospital level. Ken Norton, what about the corrections system? I've got a friend who actually works at the secure psychiatric unit at the prison right here in Concord.
Well, it's a great question. When we talk about those numbers, like the 46 that I gave, some of those are actually people that are in the secure psychiatric unit that are waiting for transfer back to New Hampshire Hospital. And there are typically two or three people in local jails that are waiting for New Hampshire Hospital. But I think the more important point, and we're getting at NAMI more and more calls each week from people who are calling the police because there's a situation with a family member or a loved one, to have them brought to the hospital, and instead they're being brought to jails and they're not going to the hospital and they're ending up incarcerated. And so one of the other big areas of concern is the spillover into the criminal justice system and the courts from people that should be in the mental health system.
So it's expensive.
Very.
As we all know, incarceration is expensive.
In human terms and economic terms.
You have some experience with this, John, right?
Well, you can end up, Andrew could very easily have ended up in the criminal justice system. I'm aware of the involuntary admissions process. Instead of calling the police on the second time, I had called the police. We had interacted with them. They walked away. They said, we don't see the problem, and if you want to do something, it's up to you. Again, he wasn't demonstrating a problem when they showed up. So had he been the second time when he went in the hospital, had I called the police because of another incident that he had, he would have been taken to jail.
And you got to feel for the police in a way. I mean, they're not mental health experts.
Right. They have a very difficult process. They need training. They need to understand situations. We see, unfortunately, on television, we see what they go through on a daily basis sometimes when it goes bad. Because they don't know what they're responding to. They don't know the person's intent. They don't understand the thought processes, and they don't necessarily have the training to differentiate those things and respond properly.
Aaron, I have heard that, you know, lots of people in our correction system, prisons and jails, local jails, are there because they're having some sort of a mental health issue. Is that another form of sort of institutionalization?
You know, it happens all the time, and I don't think it's the same kind of institutionalization as you get when you're involuntarily committed, because those are different standards. You know, one's criminal and one's civil. But I would like to talk about the police and police involvement. And, you know, the really proactive departments out there are training people up in mental health services and how to interact with somebody on the street that's in a crisis. Those are great things to do. Each of the mobile crisis teams that have rolled out have intentionally gone out and tried to make relationships with their local police department so the police departments can call them when they get a call where it's involving somebody that's having a psychiatric crisis. And alternatively, if, you know, the mobile crisis team wanted some support, they could contact their local law enforcement. But it's really great to see it go the other way when the law enforcement says, hey, you know, we have an issue here. Let's get the mobile crisis team. Let's get the mental health center involved.
Let's get the experts involved.
Let's divert that arrest. Let's divert the incarceration.
Let's take one more call if we could. Margarita is calling from Portsmouth. Hi, Margarita. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Hi. It's a wonderful conversation. So everybody in New Hampshire knows what I know. I changed the clinic in Las Vegas, Nevada, where I was asked to run the city clinic, mental health clinic, into a diversionary unit. It presumes certain things. It presumes that psychiatric patients are not incompetent, that a good psychiatric physician can medicate brilliantly and manage the patient's illness, that social workers, nurse practitioners, and nurses are some of the best physician extenders in mental health, that our clinic was right off Las Vegas Boulevard. So I told everybody we're going to let the patients who are high risk have appointments. Everybody else who hallucinate during the night, come to my clinic in the morning. We didn't let anybody live with their problems for long. I had to train the medical records people who were really angry with me. They said, what kind of nonsense is this? We can't get the records up. I said, you'll try. The doctor said, you're throwing patients under the bus. I said, I don't think so. Let's let them try. And within a year, we had a complete diversionary system, much as was described by, I think, the fellow who talked about, there was a young fellow initially talked about a couple of clinics where they're doing really much of the same work.
Well, Marguerite, it's good to hear from you. And sorry to jump in. Just given time constraints, I'm going to have to let you go. But it's good to hear about her experience in Nevada. All of you have one last question, and I apologize for asking you to be quick. But Dr. Torrey, you first. Let's say tomorrow you wake up and there's a headline that some wonderful person has given $100 million to New Hampshire's mental health system. Where should it go?
Well, we definitely want a clear assessment of the overall system because it's a systems issue. And then I think clearly building out community mental health systems to provide more care to help people that are now in New Hampshire Hospital who might be able to be discharged if they had the right supports. That would make an enormous difference. And then I also think that some local beds are going to be helpful. Right now, with people in the emergency room, they need to have a place to go that's acute care.
Okay. How about you, John?
I'd start with the community mental health system. My son's just entering that, but I've had a personal plea from the clinicians there to help them. They have a high turnover rate. They have low staffing. They need help. So that starts it. Statewide mobile crisis. My son was not able to get help because of the region we live in. It's not available for everybody.
It's just Manchester, Concord, and Nashua, is that correct? Yeah. Okay, so you've got $100 million, Aaron. What do you do?
Well, it's sounding uniform. I would put it into the community also. I would and I would make sure that what the mental health centers ask for is they ask for more money for their employees so they can retain their workforce and get new people and to pay for the programs.
Huge workforce shortages. Huge. And we've talked about that in earlier shows. We didn't talk about it today. Ken, go ahead.
Just quickly, I want to encourage that anybody that is having mental health issues, don't wait till it's a crisis, because most people are served well, but the system impacts on crisis. So we need assessment. We need statewide mobile crisis response. We need more beds. We need more community services, clubhouses, peer supports. We need better reimbursement rates for community mental health services.
All right, all of you, thank you so much. We barely scratched the surface. I really appreciate you all coming in today. And check out our website, nhpr.org/exchange, for links to extensive coverage of this issue, including by the Concord Monitor and NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.